Success. Andrew, are you with
Yeah. I
Great.
am, yeah. And so thank you for the great introduction. And yeah, it was so much fun to meet you in Juneau, Alaska, and share about improvisation. So happy to kind of share the story of how I got into that, as well as then the impact that can have kind of on business and storytelling and organizations in general. So I think probably the most important thing to understand as a starting point for me is that I am a nerd. I have a degree in computer science and engineering, and I've always been kind of engineering mindset. I've always been obsessed with efficiency ever since I can remember, or really since before I can remember, because I was born 3 weeks early. So apparently even in the womb, I was like, I don't need a full 9 months. I'm ready to go right now. And that efficiency obsession kind of carried on throughout middle school and high school. I remember in middle school when I discovered that if you put all the like silverware together when loading a dishwasher, you save about 20 seconds on the unload. And I got so excited about discovering that I wrote up a 10-point plan of how to efficiently load and unload the dishwasher, which my family promptly ignored. Right, so always obsessed with efficiency. And so I went on to The Ohio State University and got a degree in computer science and engineering. And then after that, started working at Procter & Gamble. And it was at Ohio State and then later at P&G that I started to realize that there's a difference between being efficient and being effective. Because you could be efficient with things like computers, which is what I was good at. So, you know, you don't have to motivate a computer to work. You don't have to convince it to turn on. It doesn't need a cup of coffee to start in the morning. However, humans are different, and you can't really be efficient with humans because they have emotions and feelings and all that kind of stuff. And instead, you have to be effective. But I am in many ways a stereotypical nerd. As Pete can kind of attest, I have a skinny body, nasally voice, allergy to the sun, and a perfect trifecta of all that. And so I didn't necessarily have the skills that I needed to interact with people. But luckily for me in college, my best friend wanted to start an improv comedy group. He needed people and forced me to join. And it was through improvisation that I started to learn about kind of how to use humor and how to use improv and that kind of thing. And so now what I do is my business is called Humor That Works. I work with organizations and individuals on how to use humor to be more effective. And a large part of that is applied improvisation training. So that's taking concepts, ideas, and exercises from the world of improvisation and applying them to things like communication techniques or storytelling or creativity and problem solving and productivity and all that kind of stuff. And so that's kind of the way that Pete and I met was in leading an improv-based storytelling workshop in Juneau when I was there traveling for work and to kind of check off all of these individual states. So that's kind of a high-level background in general. As far as where the milkshakes come into play, it's just an obsession that I've had ever since I can really remember as well. Because to me, milkshakes are the deliciousness of ice cream in an easy-to-consume form where you don't have to, like, move anything to your mouth. As long as you can suck, you can enjoy a milkshake. So I've always enjoyed those. And, in fact, is one of the ways that I reward myself after doing events and stuff is to go and grab a milkshake. So certainly go out and do that. Yeah, so that's kind of the background reference there. But I think kind of the next kind of focus that I'll share is a little bit of my background on storytelling and into how improv can kind of help with storing and why story is important when it comes to organizations and some of the things that I work with when I work with organizations and individuals. And certainly if at any time people have questions or anything like that, certainly feel free to speak up. I like to keep things interactive, even in a phone call. I know it's a little bit harder to do, but certainly if there's an area that I can provide for clarification or if people are interested in a specific topic, let me know. Cause I want to, you know, maybe make sure that, providing the most value to all of you on the call with us today.
Great. I have one quick question. Sorry, Andrew. This is Tom speaking. And I mm-hmm. was just wondering the extent of your analytic skills back when you were checking out the dishwasher and putting the like silverware together. Did you do different trials and measure it and then come up with how you saved it, or did you just ballpark, I've saved this much,
Well, the,
kind of intuit?
The, Yeah, the data analytics obsessed person that I am now wished I did all of the individual details and read control experiments and all that kind of stuff. But in the fifth grade, I was more of a ballpark figure of like, this is faster. And it was an approximation of about 20 seconds. I did time it twice, I think, once with and once without. But, you know, certainly the in base could have been a little bit higher in terms of the number of times that I tried it. But yeah, it's certainly something that I've always been, you know, quantifying the things that we do has always been something very valuable or important to me. And I'm realizing it's because numbers help me understand or quantify the things that are going on in our life. So I wasn't as rigorous in my testing as maybe I should have been, but certainly.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. So to kind of jump into my background or my introduction into storytelling, like probably many people, is that there are a few people within my kind of extended family that are phenomenal storytellers, and you just grow up hearing them tell these fascinating stories. Like my grandfather was an incredible storyteller, and he had a great way of kind of capturing what was in his mind and what he was going through. I remember him telling a story. He was standing on a table to change a light bulb, and my grandmother was supposed to be holding the table down to make sure that he didn't fall. But something happened where she basically ended up getting kind of catapulted across the room as a aspect of trying to fix this light. And I just remember the key part of the story that I remember from him is he was talking about his mindset. As he was flying through the air, he claims that he was thinking, you know, does he land on his left shoulder, which is then going to make it harder for him to go to dance the next day because he was a big social dancer, or should he land on his right shoulder because that was then going to impact his painting? So I just remember like him telling those individual details of thinking about like his mindset and what he was going through. And then my Uncle Dave is a phenomenal storyteller and just has interesting, crazy things happen to him. And he has a fun sense of humor. Like the time he was out boating with his family and he was like, oh, I'm going to see if I can, you know, go down and touch the bottom of the lake. And so he swam, and rather than swimming down, he actually just swam under the boat to the other side and stayed there for 3, 4, 5 minutes, kind of hearing his family start to freak out of like, where is he? When's he going to come back up? And after he felt like they had sufficiently waited long enough, he swam back under the boat and acted like he had just come up from the depths of the water. And was like, man, it is cold down there. He has this just great style of storytelling. And like I said, I never necessarily had the skill set for it. My old storytelling style was, here are the facts, right? This happened, and this happened, and this happened. And, you know, we know from storytelling that that's not the case. And so for me, my ability to learn more about storytelling, the value of storytelling came from improvisation, because improv helped in a number of ways, certainly in terms of the repetition of getting on stage and performing and boosting confidence was a big part of it, but also the mindset of improvisation, which is yes and. And yes and is a mindset basically as an idea of, you know, if you're presenting an idea in an improv scene, rather than negate the details of it, you yes and it to an area. So if I'm in an improv scene and I step out and I say, you know, oh my God, there is a, you know, there's a dog that just entered the room, and someone's like, ah, it's not really a dog, it's just a piece of dust or something like that, or it's a soccer ball, right? That doesn't really help move the scene forward at all. But if you're like, oh my God, there's a dog in the room, and someone's like, yes, and there's a monkey riding on it, then you get to see a much more interesting scene about a dog riding a monkey, and you're building this idea together. And so that mindset is what helps us in improvisation come up with stories and scenes and ideas off the top of our head and make it seem like it all makes sense based off of the suggestion. And so the same thing can kind of be said to be true of storytelling as well. And so that's one of the big ways that it helps. It's also as a mindset. I've been traveling quite a bit. In fact, I am in Hawaii right now. I'm going to be doing a storytelling show tomorrow. And with that performance, I will have been spoken or performed in all 50 states, which is pretty exciting. And with each of the states, I'm trying to develop at least one story about the state that I'm going to compile together in a collection of 50 states, 50 stories. And that mindset of just looking for a story and kind of yes-anding the moment to think of the story has been a really interesting way to remember my experiences. I think storytelling allows us to do that by just reflecting back on it and saying, okay, how would I tell this in a compelling way? It helps us kind of arrange our thoughts and our ideas around a specific moment. And sometimes it works out great and becomes a story. Like when I was in Alaska, when I was in Juneau and I initially had met Pete, I remember hiking on the Mendenhall Glacier Trail and I saw a bear for the first time, which growing up in Ohio and then living in New York City, you don't really see bears. And so it was this incredible moment. And in fact, the entire time I was hiking, after I talked to the rangers, I wanted to see a bear because I knew that would make for a more enjoyable story. Then I went hiking and I wanted to see a bear, but I didn't want to actually see a bear. And it was exciting because I actually saw this bear. I thought, okay, this is going to be a great story. And I remember the rangers telling me that one way to make the bears go away is you make noise. And what people often do is they just talk to the bear. So I'm like, okay, great. So bears are introverts, apparently, because you talk to it and it'll go away. But it became this fun moment of like hiking and seeing it. So you kind of yes and that moment of if you're a storyteller, really anything that happens to you, good or bad, can be a story. So if good things happen to you, that's great. That's positive. If bad things happen to you, certainly you don't want them to, but at the end of the day, at least you'll get a good story out of it. And that's kind of the yes and mentality that comes from it. The other thing that improvisation really helps is in getting repetitions at telling it. So one of the things that I shared with the group on improvised storytelling is what's called the story spine. And this is an exercise that you can use to kind of really get the structure of good storytelling. And the spine is once upon a time there was blank, and every day kind of setting the stage of what happened every day until one day something different happened. And because of that, there's this consequence. Because of that, there's a consequence and on and on and on until finally one day something happens. And then from that day forward, there's kind of a new norm. And so you can see this very true in traditional storytelling of fairy tales. Like Beauty and the Beast, once upon a time, there was this woman named Belle who loved to read. And every single day she would go through the town and read all these books until one day her father was out running around, got captured by the Beast. And because of that, Belle went to try to go save her father. And because of that, the Beast swapped Belle and the father in terms of their prisoners. And because of that, the Beast and Belle got to know each other. And because of that, they fell in love until finally one day they kissed right before the Beast was to permanently become the Beast. And from that day forward, they lived happily ever after as prince and princess or whatever the actual story is, right? So it just gives you a structure, and improvisation allows you to have that repetition of going through it over and over and over again and creating fictional versions of that to create it. I think probably then the final piece that's most helpful and relevant to improvisation, particularly in storytelling and organizations, is that it gives people a safe space to try these things out because people aren't so used to telling stories. They aren't, you know, sure if they're allowed to do it within organizations or not. And improvisation helps them to kind of feel comfortable doing it. So that's the kind of benefit of improvisation. So I guess, are there any questions or anything around improv that people are interested in? Otherwise, I also want to talk a little bit about why storytelling and humor is so important in the workplace, and then some of the things that I do to put a little bit more structure around coming up with those things.
Yeah, Andrew, this is Pete. On the improv, could you describe a typical situation or an organization that you would use that in? And what they might have come up with and how that benefited the organization?
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as the type of organization, the groups that I work with range pretty drastically. So I was just in Alaska this past week in Anchorage this time, not in Juneau, but I was speaking at the Alaska Forum for the Environment and was talking about the value of humor and how that can help in some of the storytelling that they're able to work on as well. And so like there's groups like that. I'm in talks with the group to do some stuff with the Department of Energy potentially. And I've done a lot with tech companies and engineering groups because we stereotypically as engineers don't necessarily have great social skills as a stereotype. And so kind of helping them. So as far as the type of organization, it's a huge range of people. It's basically people who want to try to be more effective at what they do. And then as far as positive experiences or results of it go, there's been a wide range of things with groups in terms of helping communicate messages. I know there's been some organizations working with them of how do you clarify your story to your audience so that they know the actual background of your company, right? Because more and more, we aren't just buying from the cheapest place, we're buying from the place that we care about their story and what their history is. You see that with things like Tom's Shoes and other places as well. So we want to know the story of the group that they're working with. This is particularly true with recruiting as well, is people more and more want meaningful work in the sense of what they do as an impact on the organization, but also that the organization that they're working for is doing good in some way, whether that is a for-profit company that then reinvests in the community or creating a product that helps people, or it's a nonprofit organization. And so helping groups kind of be able to tell that story so that they can connect with other people. But probably the area that is most helpful is the individual level, is talking with individuals and helping empower them to have stories. So for example, I was just doing an event in New York and was teaching people, you know, networking skills. And I'm an engineer, so I turn a lot of things into processes. So how I create stories is a process, how I use humor in the workplace is a process, and even how I have conversations with people is a process. And the three-step process that I use for small talk is to ask compelling questions, tell interesting stories, and to continue the conversation. So asking questions is just to, you know, get to know more about the other person and put the focus on them. Continuing the conversation is how you follow up with them afterwards. But the key piece is kind of telling interesting stories as a way to connect with people so that as you tell that story, you drop in different ideas that help you connect with that person as an individual and you learn things about each other. And so I've had a number of people share with me that afterwards they feel a lot more comfortable being able to go to a networking event or being able to do an interview or even just talk to their coworkers. And that's where kind of my big focus is on the individual level of empowering them to do it. And improvisation, like I said, then gives a safe space for them to be able to practice those skills so that you know, every skill you learn and you get better at by practice and repetition. And rather than that practice repetition being in an actual interview or in an actual meeting where you're a presenter trying to learn how to use storytelling, it's like, why not get the repetitions in a very safe space of improvisation and then take that skill set, take that confidence and take that ability into the real situations.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. So I guess to kind of talk a little bit more about the value of story and humor, certainly a story is, there's a lot of important research behind it that I'm sure many of you are aware of. Things like facts are 20 times more likely to be remembered in a story form rather than in bullet point form. And storytelling is how we connect to different things. It's how we can make things experiential. Like, you know, experience is the best teacher, the second best teacher is a good story that puts people through that same experience as well. And so that's where really when I start to think of the process that I put around of teaching people how to do storytelling and how to use stories a little bit more is to really start first with that purpose. You know, why are they telling that story? So is it to build rapport with someone? So when I speak to large groups, a lot of times I talk about being from Ohio because that's where I grew up in. And whenever I talk about an Ohio and have an Ohio-based story, people inevitably come up to me afterwards. And if they're from Ohio, they'll say, you know, there's, oh, Cincinnati versus Columbus or Cleveland or Grater's Ice Cream versus Jenny's Ice Cream. We'll talk about these very Ohio specifics because we're connected now through that common bond of Ohio. Or a lot of times I'll also mention my, I'm a comedian, but my favorite comedian is Eddie Izzard, who is a British comedian, international, he's phenomenal. And if other people are fans of Eddie Izzard, they'll come up to me and we'll talk afterwards of, you know, Cake or Death versus Death Star Canteen and some of these other bits that he has and all that stuff. And so we have this connection over that. When I talk to people and tell them that I am an introvert, the introverts, well, they don't always come up and talk to me, but we make like eye contact across the room kind of knowing. But it's this instant kind of connection and bond between people. And so knowing that purpose is very, very valuable. And so we can have those connections of like, oh, these specific details connect us and they build rapport. Or, you know, say we want to teach someone something or share an experience that is a different story that we might tell. And so depending on those situations, you know, we're changing what story we're going to use and how we're going to tell it. But for me as an engineer, it starts first with that purpose. And after that, it kind of goes into structure. And one of the things that I think is important to note, especially for storytelling in organizations, is an understanding between a story and an anecdote, which I think are both incredibly valuable. And so I'm curious, Peter, from other people on the call, what do you guys think kind of distinguishes a story? What's your definition of a story? How do you think that might be different from an anecdote?
It's something I've pondered for a while myself. I'd love to have somebody jump in and explain their view. Okay.
Yeah, are there any ideas out there of anecdote versus story, or even really if there's something component like specific to story that you think is absolutely crucial?
Well, sorry, it took me a little bit to get unmuted. Is there someone else there too?
It's Jules. I unmuted. I'm trying to ponder that because I always struggle with, like, is it just a shrunken story or what is it? Oh.
I define this as Tom, that, you know, an anecdote would be something that happened to me, and it might not have a big story arc in it. It's just some interesting event that I'm relaying. But the story would be a more full-blown telling. It could be of an anecdotal thing, but paying more attention to how the build-up is, the intro, the conclusion.
Oh. Yeah, that's kind of close to mine, and maybe because I've lived with him for so long. This is Geraldine. But I think of anecdote as being much quicker and completely personal, or at least relayed third person of a personal experience, whereas a story, even if it's a personal story, has more of an arc to it, or even follow some framework if it's the heroic journey or some other aspect, but that it's got a kind of an archetypal aspect to it, versus the anecdote could just be a one-off, here's something that happened that applies to this situation.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, and I think there's a lot of good understanding because it's something that I kind of struggled with a little bit as well and continue to kind of go back and forth. But the way that I kind of think about it is an anecdote is it's typically shorter and it's of a particular incident or event. And it's usually, something that happened to you or someone close to you that you can kind of relay that for. Whereas a story, you know, at least the old kind of literary, if I remember English class level definition of it, is that a hero struggles to overcome obstacles and they reach an important goal. And so I think to me, a big distinction between an anecdote and a story is that in a story, there are typically stakes of some sort and there's a transformation that takes place. And those, I think, are the two kind of key components to it. So one of the stories that I tell, especially around this idea of efficiency versus effectiveness, is kind of the moment that I realized that I was in college. And when I was in college, I was a resident advisor. And so I was basically responsible for helping to take care of incoming freshman residents and make sure that, you know, I answer their questions and kind of serve as like the intermediary between a parent and like a friend and all that. Luckily for me at Ohio State, I was paired with another co-resident advisor, someone we took care of the same group. We're on the guys and girls on the same floor. And as I mentioned, you know, I'm a stereotypical nerd, and the co-RA, my co-RA named Amy, she was a stereotypical kind of mother hen type person where she always put relationships first and focused on other people. And it was actually a really good partnership because she was really, really good with the people and I was really good with paperwork. And so we worked really well together. And she was kind of in charge of the programming a lot. So she decided that one quarter that we should cook dinner for all of our residents. We should do a meal with all of our residents. And I thought, sweet, you know, we'll take everyone to the cafeteria, we'll swipe these meal plans, and it'll be the easiest program ever. It would be great. And she's like, no, I want to cook for our residents, right? And so I thought, well, that's going to be a lot less efficient, but okay, she's in charge, right? Again, still obsessed with efficiency. So we cooked the one thing that you cook whenever you cook a ton of stuff for a bunch of people, and that's spaghetti. And I should tell you that I'm not a cook. I don't cook very well. Like, about the most advanced thing that I cook now are Pop-Tarts. And that's not even putting them in a toaster oven. It's just eating them raw straight out of the package. But so I didn't know how to cook. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch Amy, see what she does, and then repeat it. And so I watch Amy. She takes out a pot. She fills it with water. She puts it on the burner, turns the burner on, lets the water boil, puts the spaghetti in. All right. Easy enough, right? So I'm like, oh, I can do that, and I can do it more efficiently. And so I take out a pot of water, I fill it with, or pot, fill it with water, put it on the burner, turn the burner on, immediately put the spaghetti in before the burner comes on, and learn very quickly that that is wrong. Because, like, Amy flipped out. She was like, no, you can't do that. What are you doing? She dumped everything out. She's like, listen, you know what? You just get out of the kitchen. I'll take care of everything. And so she ended up, she cooked the spaghetti, she made the salad, she made the breadsticks, all that kind of stuff. So we do the program. Overall, it goes very well. We have fun. The residents leave. Amy and I are cleaning up. We start talking, and, like, I could sense that she was still mad at me, mostly because she said, I'm still mad at you. But I realized, so I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I've never cooked before. And she's like, I'm mad because you always do this. He's like, oh, well, how could I always do this if this is the first time that we've ever cooked spaghetti? And he's like, no, I'm mad because you always take shortcuts, right? You always try to do the least amount of work, and you do it with your schoolwork, you do it with your residents, and you do it with me. And that's when I realized that she was right. Like, I was treating my residents like a task list. I was, like, spending 3 minutes with each one and saying, you know, going down the list, checking them off and thinking, like, oh, I'm a really good RA. But it turns out that that's not how people work. And that's when I realized that there's a difference between efficiency and effectiveness. And so to me, that is a story because there's stakes at place, right? The relationship and what's going on with my residents. And there's a transformation that happens. I change as a person in terms of my character, my viewpoint of efficiency versus effectiveness. So that's a story. An anecdote version of that same story would be like, oh yeah, I remember when I was cooking once with my co-RA and I tried to repeat what she saw, but I put the spaghetti in and before letting it boil, and she was mad, right? Like, it's a recounting of what happened, but there's no information about my background. There's no information about the stakes, and there's no discussion of kind of a transformation that takes place. And so to me, that's kind of the distinction. I think when it comes to storytelling and organizations, both are incredibly powerful for different reasons. Anecdotes are great as a way to connect with people, to share a short story, a short idea, or a short series of events to say, hey, this is what happened, and let's connect because we both like skiing, or because we both like milkshakes, or because we both watched the Super Bowl, or whatever it is. It can also be used for entertainment, right? A lot of times are short kind of fun stories that you are versions of vignettes that you might tell, versus like a story in the traditional sense, a story of a narrative, again, has those stakes and that transformation. So you're going to change what you use based on, you know, what your purpose or your focus is. And so I think that's an important distinction kind of to make. And then you go through a process of how to do it. So you can think of the structure. Some people think of structure in terms of beginning, middle, end. Some people think of it as setup, conflict, and resolution. Other people, when in the business sense, especially for anecdotes, we sometimes think of it as context, action, and results. So what is the context of what happens? What action did people take? And then what was the result of, you know, that action? And so based on that structure, you can kind of define what your structure is. And the process that I then go through is the first step is to get out a first draft in some way, to spew it out, whether that's monologuing, you know, based off of the suggestion, or just going at it, just talking, or writing it out without kind of like filtering it. Some people start with a straight outline. Some people just kind of say, okay, well, this is going to be a recap of the event. And then from there, you can then summarize that story in three lines of what it is, you know, what's the most important line for that beginning, what's the most important line for that middle, what's the most important line for that end, and then kind of refine based on your purpose, what you want to do, and go through back to that structure and add detail into each one of those sections that are going to be relevant to the story, and then finally create a compelling first line, a compelling last line, and practice it. So that's kind of the high-level framework that I give for organizations in terms of how they can use stories, because I think there's a big difference between general storytelling of finding, you know, interesting things to talk about, and then storytelling in organizations where, again, you want to have a purpose or a focus behind those particular ideas. So I guess with that in mind, are there any questions kind of around other people's thoughts on anecdote versus story based on what I've shared or into this process of creating a story?
This is Jules. You've opened up, thank you, because you've now explained it and my life is clearer now and I know how to use it. I do a lot of work with resumes and people in transition and trying to story some of their situation, action, results, and feedback aspects of what I hear so they get a little bit of insight. So, and then I also get the clients to create some stories to use in their interview process and also how they work with each other. So this part helps. That's actually a great way of putting the anecdote because it's very short into this, like you gave a very good example of it. So thank you. I just want to say thank you. That works. That's going to really help.
Yeah, and I think that is, it's helpful to people in the business world to understand that difference and that there's value in both because sometimes when I find that whether it's improvisation or humor or storytelling, there's fear coming into it because of expectations. I mean, Pete even kind of mentioned that at the beginning, even though he's an experienced storyteller and has told many stories in many different contexts, he still is like, oh no, I try to avoid improvisation at all costs because we have this misperception of kind of what it is. And that's definitely true in the corporate world when people, if no one's ever taken an improv class or done any theater type thing or tried, you know, humor, it seems very intimidating. And a lot of times people think of it as a skill that you either have or don't have. But the reality is that humor is a skill and it means it can be learned. And I remember I was doing an event, I was speaking at an event in Switzerland, and another gentleman on the event was a guy named Kevin Richardson. He's also known as the Lion Whisperer. So like if you've ever seen the YouTube video of a lion hugging a dude, that's Kevin Richardson. He basically lives with lions. He raises them from when they're really young and they treat him as one of the pride. And so when I was talking with Kevin before the event and he found out that I did stand up, he was like, oh, I could never do that. It's like too scary. And I'm like, you live with lions, right? That's insane to me but it's because he had never practiced it because he had never tried it. And humor is a skill, and it means it, you know, that means it can be learned. Or storytelling is a skill, which means it can be learned. And so there's a lot of kind of fear, anxiety around it, and that's where kind of one, introducing about the lower stakes of things, like anecdote versus story is helpful. And then again, improvisation and the practice of things to give them, you know, basically baby steps into the process can be very helpful to helping other people create their stories as well. Great. So I guess, are there other questions? Or maybe, Pete, you can maybe give me a little bit more perspective as well based on kind of where we're at. What is helpful to wrap things up for as we head towards the ending part of the call? What's helpful to wrap things up? How can I help share with the organization a little bit more with my background?
Well, just again, I'd like to hear a little bit about how you position yourself. Well, now you have a body of work in your team, but how did you get people confident about that bringing you in was a good thing to talk about humor and it would be safe and it would be a good experience? Like, how did you get people to connect? You know, how did they find you and how did they bring you into an organization in the very beginning?
Yeah, absolutely. So happy to share that. In the very beginning, it was a lot of volunteering of services. Partially, I started internally at Procter & Gamble. So I was working at Procter & Gamble and I would offer internal things like, you know, hey, I'm happy to lead, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of team building type stuff in the morning before our offsite starts. Or there's different groups that have monthly meetings. And so I'd volunteer to say, hey, I'd love to lead something on humor in the workplace or share a little bit more with storytelling. Or if we're doing an offsite that has workshops, hey, I'd love to lead an applied improv workshop as well. So a lot of it started internally volunteering. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it was kind of volunteering externally as well, going to meetup.com and finding groups that were meeting in the area, like agile project developers who I could say, oh, well, let me teach about improv and how that can help. And with that, I was building my skill, right, because practice and repetition, but also building my client list. And a lot of this type of work, especially applied improvisation and storytelling, because people don't know exactly what it means. Right. They have connotations of it of like, oh, improv, that means like whose line is it anyway? Right. And it's like, well, no, we're talking about a problem. It's different. So a lot of it is referral and word of mouth because it's hard to just crystallize everything. So it became, oh, I have a client list. they saw me do this free event somewhere, but they're like, oh, okay, well, let me in. You know, you would be great for this same group. Or exactly how I'm talking to you today is I offered a workshop in Juneau. Pete came to, he's like, oh, really like what you're talking about. I know this group, we do a call where I think it could be very valuable for you to connect. And so, you know, we got connected here. So a lot of it's word of mouth referral. The other thing that is really, really important to me is that because I'm an engineer, I'm focused on what works. And so both in terms of my TEDx talk and on my website and in the actual talks that I do, I spend a lot of time talking about why this stuff is so important. So I give the statistics around 83% of Americans are stressed out at work, 55% of Americans are unsatisfied with their jobs, and 47% of Americans struggle to stay happy. That 70% of the workforce is disengaged, costing the U.S. economy up to about $500 billion in lost productivity every single year. That the average healthcare cost is this and this thing in the area. So I start with the facts behind why this stuff is important, and how there are studies that show that storytelling does help you remember things longer, or that humor can help you be more productive and less stressed in the workplace and all those things. And so a lot of it stems first from talking the language of who I'm talking to, of why it's important, and then going into the how a little bit later.
Thank you.
Are there any other
questions? Yeah, any other questions?
Well, one of the things I would like to mention is that Andrew has a TEDx talk, Humor at Work, that you can easily find on the web. And Andrew, you've got a book as well.
I do, yeah. That book is 501 Ways to Use Humor in the Workplace. The idea was I was doing all these events and talking with different groups, and they would be inspired to use humor, but they didn't know how. And so it's meant to be a resource on how to use humor. So basically you can go and you pick, flip to a random page, and there's going to be a list of different ways that you can try humor in the workplace. And then the other thing is I've also developed an online humor course. So people that are interested, they come to events and stuff and they want to get more into the details, then they can take the humor course and find, you know, the ways to use humor appropriately and use different humor devices or shortcuts, of which storytelling is one of them. And then there's association and incongruity and all these other things as well. But yeah, so it's meant to be kind of a follow-up resource for people that want to get into more detail.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Andrew, this is Mark Steinman. So first of all, thank you very much for your time and your sharing your wisdom. I'm very curious about the 50 stories in 50 states piece. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Sure. So I like being a project manager and an engineer, I've always been driven by kind of a task list or things to do. And so as soon as I started speaking and performing, I had met a gentleman who has spoken in all 50 states and performed in all or spoken in all seven continents, including Antarctica. And I was like, that's an amazing goal. I want to do that same thing. So I've had a goal to speak or perform in all 50 states. And in this past year, I made a decision to be a nomad for a year. So I was living in New York City, but I decided to put all my stuff in storage, aka my mom's place, and live out of two bags. And so travel around. And with that, I was like, oh, with that, I can visit all the states in one period. And that'll give me a kind of a focus for these journeys. And so the goal was to do then 50 states, and that turned into doing all 50 states in a 12-month time period. So from February 11th of last year to February 11th of this year, hitting all 50 states, and along the way kind of tracking what's going on and wanting to develop a story in each one of those places of, you know, for when I think about New Mexico, what do I think about? Oh, I think about the story of my brother and I going hiking and how it was similar to how we used to play as kids, going out and exploring in our suburban neighborhood, or the story in Florida of going and performing at my very first poetry show. And so it just kind of became a way for me to conceptualize and to think about this journey and recap it, rather than just have a, hey, here's my daily journal of the places that I went to I didn't think would be that interesting, but maybe, you know, one story, one thing that stood out, either a lesson that I learned or something that impacted me in some way from each location you know, put it together. And so that kind of created, I'm still in the process of creating some of those stories. I have ideas for each one, and I'm still kind of being observant to say, you know, what's my story of Hawaii going to be, because I just got here. So that's kind of been the process.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. And it's cool to be a part of that that end of that one-year journey. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you, Andrew. I really appreciate that. That was this has been terrific. And I might take you up on that online humor course.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what we can do is, you know, if people have questions, certainly they can feel free to contact me. And then, Pete, if you have a way of kind of getting out to people, we can all.
Hello?
Hello? Andrew, are you still there? Oh, we lost him.
We lost Andrew.
Okay, well, I'm going to stop the recording.
Must have landed in Hawaii. Okay.